Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Long before the pandemic and public health concerns pushed many of us indoors, some of the most successful people fueled their careers with carefully perfected work-from-home routines, recognizing the strategic advantage afforded by greater flexibility. Our guest today is Laura Vanderkam. She draws on her 18 years of experience working from home. She has a new book. It's called The New Corner Office, How the Most Successful People Work from Home. Laura, welcome to The Mountain Life. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
As you know, in the last 3 or 4 months, since many of us have been working remotely, we have oftentimes wondered if our productivity is higher or lower than if we were to be in the office. And it's sort of entertaining to me that we don't really know the answer to that. And we've seen some of the statistics that play out in news media and things like that, saying that in certain spheres, there is more productivity and in others, there is less productivity. So what can you tell us about that question? How do we gauge our own productivity?
It's really challenging because we're not making widgets. I mean, you could tell, like, am I making more widgets at home or at work? Like, then you would be able to know. Yeah. But for a lot of us, the work we're doing is more knowledge-based, and so it's hard to quantify. I mean, were you able to accomplish something because you were more comfortable working from home and weren't freezing in an over-air-conditioned office, or did you miss out on an idea because you didn't bump into a colleague in the hallway? It's really hard to know these things. What we do know is that surveys have found that when people say they really need to buckle down and get something done, people are far more likely to choose a home office as the place to have that happen versus their office during working hours. Because it turns out that offices are incredibly distracting places. I know a lot of us have become intimately familiar with the distractions of working from home over the past 4 months. But it turns out that offices weren't exactly paradises from that, you know, perspective either.
That's right. So you kind of say that working from home is a skill and it's something that we need to learn. And so you're going to help us out with some of these. And it'll be interesting because now that we're 3 to 4 months into this experiment, some of us, we will be interested and curious in learning whether or not we have put into practice, you know, the things that are going to make a skill out of working from home. And so one of those things, of course, until the pandemic struck, I never thought that I could work at home because I would always be working from the kitchen table. And I've discovered that is not a place that I can work. So I set up, you know, a little office in the corner of my bedroom. I suspect, is that rule number one?
You want to find a good place to work. And yes, a lot of people in March just chose whatever seemed most convenient, which was often the kitchen table because it's flat. I mean, yeah. There's a chair, right? But long-term, you're better off finding a place with a window and some privacy so you can shut the door. For many people, that is going to be a bedroom. That's the most likely place that has a window and a door. But it can be somewhere else too if you find another spot in your house that works. And if this is going to be part of your life really long term, if you work for a company that's already said, listen, we're going to be doing more remote work long term, and a lot of people want to have that, it might be worth looking into even moving to find a place that supports your working from home productivity.
As you say, you've worked from home for quite a long time. You're the author of a handful of books, including What the Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast and I Know How She Does It and 168 Hours. You're also the host of a couple of podcasts, The New Corner Office, the same title of your new book, and Before Breakfast. So you have been very successful working from home and productive. You really have pursued this as a skill. You have maybe not perfected it at this point, but it's a work in progress and one that's working well for you. What are your biggest secrets that you think people haven't figured out yet?
Well, one of the best things you can do is set challenging but doable daily task lists. When you work in an office, there's a good sense that you've put in an honest day's labor by the fact that you showed up and you stayed until quitting time. And there's a certain time where the group norm says it's okay to leave. And you don't necessarily have that when you work from home. And so it could be a little bit disorienting, like how do I know that I've had a good day? And so what I learned to do is to make these short but challenging daily task lists and then when you are done with those tasks, you are done. And this allows you to have this incredible sense of progress as you get these small wins every day. And it turns out that progress is incredibly motivational. So I encourage anyone who is working from home to make themselves short daily task lists. Work with your manager to set priorities for the day. If you're managing people, work with them to set these challenging but doable lists. And then you can celebrate your accomplishments and what you've gotten done, as opposed to saying, okay, the day must be done because it is 5 o'clock.
And I'm wondering where, you know, sometimes we think when we've gotten distracted at home and we say, fold a load of laundry or something like that instead of work, we do need to give ourselves credit for those places that the time wasting that we would have done at the office that is necessitated just by things like going to a conference room to meet with a group of people and the meeting doesn't get started for 10 minutes or so, and during which time you're chit-chatting. That doesn't really happen so much on Zoom calls, I've noticed. There's not a lot of that downtime.
I agree. And you know, it's fine to fold the occasional load of laundry. I would encourage people, though, to take conscious breaks during the day. Don't have laundry always be an option. Figure out a time when you're going to need a little change of pace from your work, maybe when your energy is dipping in mid-morning or mid-afternoon, and then do whatever you're going to do housewise during those times. I would also say that just because you're working from home does not automatically mean that, you know, the housework needs to be done during the workday either. This is something I have certainly learned long-term working from home, that if I consider housework to always be an option during the workday, I might not get a whole lot of work done. So it needs to either be a consciously chosen break or maybe even happen outside of work hours.
Well, that's an interesting point, because I have taken that liberty. Sometimes I fold clothes during a meeting when I'm listening. Or I, you know, do silly things like sit-ups or plank while I'm listening to a meeting.
That's obviously not a bad idea.
Meetings that I'm not really, you know, actively, it's more listening than it is huge participation. But you're kind of saying that leave those for after work, or leave those for this intentional break that you take.
I do think that we want to limit our distractions anywhere we're working. And, you know, what happens is that people are focusing on something intense. They hit a little bit of a roadblock and that voice in your brain is like, oh, let me go see if I took the meat out of the freezer for dinner. And then you go to the kitchen and next thing you know, you're sorting the mail pile and that uninterrupted work time that you could have had is gone. So you want to try to manage that, because, you know, if things occur to you to do, just write them down and do them during a time that you're actually intending to take a break. But to your earlier point, yes, there is all kinds of downtime at work. People are very, you know, aware of the distractions we have at home, but there are all kinds of distractions in the workplace as well. You know, people stopping by to chat with you about something that is not relevant to your work, or, you know, is relevant, but now is not the right time because you're doing something else. The time you spend waiting for meetings to start, the time you spend, you know, sitting there doing nothing, but you can't leave because of the group norms about what time is acceptable to leave. I mean, these are all things that just waste time. And so, you know, certainly we can waste time in a home office, but I haven't seen any indication that people waste more time in a home office than they were at the workplace.
Well, that's really heartening to know. And yeah, because you're so tuned into this topic and looking at sort of the stats that have come out of different organizations about their productivity, what are you seeing overall?
I'm seeing that people who are engaged and motivated employees are still getting great stuff done. And then, of course, there are people who are not engaged or motivated, and it turns out that people can disappoint you anywhere they work, right? It's not the location that determines that. I think a lot of organizations have realized that just about everything they could have possibly done in the office is doable remotely. Now, I do agree that it is nice to see your colleagues face-to-face and see anyone face-to-face sometimes. But I think the point of diminishing returns is way under the 40 hours of, you know, in-office work that was the expectation before. I think a lot of organizations are going to come out of this experience saying, okay, we don't want to be 100% virtual, but certainly we can change the sort of set point of what is expected, maybe 2 to 3 days in the office, 2 to 3 days at home. And that way people can really have the best of both worlds.
If you're just joining me, my guest is Laura Vanderkam. She is the author of a new book called The New Corner Office. It's the same name as her podcast. It's about how the most successful people work from home. Something interesting that you note is that it doesn't matter, you say, whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, a self-starter, or someone who prefers a lot of detailed directions. You say that you can do your clearest thinking and deepest work at home, kind of no matter who you are. Previously, we would have thought that it's only one type of person who can work at home and be really effective. And that's this very, you know, a self-starter who is really great with focus, who doesn't get distracted. But you're saying that's not true. And I, you know, I'm curious about that person who thinks that they have to go into the office in order to not be distracted. I may be a little bit that person myself, but I have been so pleasantly surprised at working from home, how while I may get distracted, I still feel like I get so much more done.
Yeah, I think people have really just had to learn. I mean, working from home is a skill, and a lot of people had trouble with it at the beginning, but a couple months in, they're really getting their legs under them and figuring out what works and what doesn't, given their own personalities. People are discovering the upsides, that there's more flexibility. If you don't work well early in the morning, maybe you can come to a agreement with your team that you have certain core hours in the middle of the day that everyone's available, but you start at a different time and end at a different time than the other person, because you're not all reporting to the same office. So you don't have to follow necessarily the exact same group norms. You know, in the past, yes, working from home was seen as this like work-life balance perk, maybe on Fridays for people who'd been with an organization from several years and proven themselves that they could be trusted, right? That was sort of the thinking here. But when March happened, all that had to go out the window. There was no sense that you could evaluate who's going to work well from home, who's not, who's new, who's not, who's a self-starter, who's not. Everyone had to do it. And yeah, some people have trouble with it. Some people shone from day one, but that's like anything, you know, you try and have everyone learn to play basketball. Some people are going to be pretty good at the beginning. Some people are going to be missing the baskets left and right, but anyone, you know, shoots 1,000 balls at the hoop, they're eventually going to get better at it. And so it's the same thing. Like, managers need to learn these skills of managing remote workers, and people who work remotely need to learn how to be a little bit more self-directed, how to set their own schedules, how to set what's a good amount of work for the day, learning how to collaborate when you're not sitting next to people. But these are all things that you can do. And one of the things I wanted to do with this book is to share some suggestions from people who had been doing it about how you can work from home productively and ambitiously.
Well, why don't you do that? Why don't you share a few great stories or these little tidbits of knowledge that those who've been doing it a long time like yourself have done? I'm sure there's some great stories out there.
Well, one thing that's very important for people is to have some ritual that tells you are starting work and some ritual that tells you are ending work. And when you commute to an office, you naturally have this sort of break in your life between work and home. And you don't when you're in office and when you're in a home office. And so it's very easy to keep working all night or half work and half surf the web. So come up with some sort of fake commute. If you're in a place where school is starting, I mean, obviously you could bring your kids to school and then come home and then start work. You know, maybe the end of the day is writing your to-do list for tomorrow, writing in a journal, or calling a colleague to say goodbye, but something that transitions you from one mode to the other. And if you can come up with that, you'll probably manage your energy better and be in a much better headspace.
Does cracking a beer open at 5 p.m. count?
Sure. You know, cocktail hour is not a bad thing. Having these daily markers of time can help us manage our energy. And so people need to take breaks too. You know, plan your breaks for the time that is low energy. Or, you know, if you're working at home and you've got other family members who are home doing school or work as well, maybe you all say, okay, we try to leave the 12:30 spot free on our calendars. We can all gather and have a family lunch together. And then you sort of set your day around that. So these are all things that you can do to kind of make sense of time in a time that is very strange when it comes to time and daily rhythms.
Do you think that there's something that the younger generation, the 20-something-year-olds, the millennials, say, also have learned as they've grown up, because they do so much, they've grown up doing work away from school or their jobs, working remotely? Because I'm seeing it in a lot of, my son, for example, is here working remotely, and boy, he gets up and he does 15 minutes of meditation, and then he's writing in his journal, and then he starts work, and it's all very calculated. And I think I'm learning something from him.
Well, it sounds like he has a great routine, and he's figured out a way to tell his brain that he is in work mode now, to transition from waking up into being in that productive mode. And that's great. Yeah. I don't know if it's a generational thing. I do think that younger people are accustomed to the communications technology that makes it possible to work anytime in any place. But all of us have been working from home in the sense that, you know, we have these phones in our pockets, and so we can check work email at night and on weekends, and people have been doing that. And that is technically working from home. It's just, we don't think of it that way, you know? And so the barrier has been more doing work during working hours from home, but the pandemic has kind of forced that issue. And a lot of more people have tried to, are figuring that part out now.
Hearing you talk has made me think of this thing that I do where if I'm answering emails on my phone, I don't really count it as work. It's because it's just my phone after all. It's only when I get out my computer and start answering emails, I'm legitimately working now, which is an interesting thing to recognize about yourself and really realize, like you say, that, you know, to not carry this work into your evening and your weekends and things like that.
There's all sorts of different barriers and boundaries that people are setting. And yes, that, I mean, it's so arbitrary what you consider work and what you don't. And I think a lot of people would have that same one. Although some people, when they're on their phone, they feel like they're working, even though they're very clearly on Instagram.
Exactly. So I'm curious, you have a 2016 TED Talk called How to Gain Control of Your Free Time. It's been viewed more than 10 million times. Tell us a little bit about that. You are very focused in on this notion of making your time count. I love it.
I do. I mean, I think that time is a fascinating concept because we all have the same amount of it, right? We all have the same 24 hours in a day. We all have 168 hours in a week. And so when you find people who are doing amazing things with their lives, it's not that they have any more time than the rest of us. And so I feel like we can study what they're doing and how they are spending their hours and seeing what the rest of us can take away from that. So I have spent my life doing that. And the TED Talk was, you know, about some ways people can think about what's important to them and how they can fill their time with those things and maybe spend more time on the things that matter and less time on the things that don't.
Yes. Also, I'm curious about what the most successful people do before breakfast. You, this is also the name of one of your podcasts, Before Breakfast. I've always been that believer, you know, I think my parents taught me early, you know, the early bird gets the worm. And luckily, our circadian rhythms are different. I'm someone who can get up at 4:30 and just feel like I'm getting so much done before breakfast. Tell us about that.
Well, mornings are a great time for doing anything that is important to you that life has a way of crowding out. And so as I've studied how people spend their time, I've generally found that people who are, you know, making time for things like exercising or meditating or creative pursuits while also building a career and raising a family, they tend to be doing it in the morning. That they get up early, they use this time when most people have more energy and discipline and focus to do things that are important to them. Now, that doesn't mean that if you are not a morning person, like all is lost. There are certainly, and you know, working from home is good for this. If you don't work well early, like maybe you can set your own hours and start working later and accomplish so much that people are still excited about it. But I have found that a lot of people who say they are not morning people, what they mean is that they're tired in the morning. But yeah, that's kind of a different matter. That's more of a function of when you went to sleep. And so if you find yourself spending the time before bed in ways that don't necessarily align with your priorities, you're just, you know, surfing the web or watching TV you don't care about, you might try cutting that off a little bit earlier, going to bed a little bit earlier, waking up a little bit earlier, and turning those unproductive evening hours into some productive morning ones.
Absolutely. You talk about thinking big, how even though you may be working remotely and or flexibly, especially during this time, it shouldn't impede our long-term career ambitions. And I think that a lot of people do think that this is just a snippet of time that is eventually going to end and we're going to get back to business. But you do want to, for example, you know, if you're going to the office, it is great to interact with your boss, for example, even if it's in the hallway or, you know, at the water cooler, just to make sure that you're tuned in. And people may be worrying about that now when you're not seeing that person around who is important to your long-term career goals.
Well, you could certainly call that person, and hopefully your manager is calling you frequently. You know, there's absolutely nothing about working from home that you can't reach out to people. And I encourage people to do so. We've sort of lost this skill of picking up the phone and calling people without a scheduled appointment, but you are allowed to do it. And if you work closely with people, it's really not a burden. It's good to communicate with people and share small bits of news, to ask questions, all that kind of thing that you would have done in an office, just to keep that sort of casual vibe going. Now, you might want to establish as a group hours that are better for chit-chat and hours that are better for everyone to just focus. But in general, it's not a problem to reach out and talk to your boss, and you should. But the thing about working from home is that you're going to be self-directed too. And so it's not just about what your manager sees as your long-term career trajectory. It's about what you see as your long-term career trajectory. And, you know, separated from group norms, where we can have a bit more of the headspace to think about these questions, you know, outside of our office environments. And maybe that means that you get together with more people who don't work in your office. When you work in an office, you tend to just, you know, hang out with your colleagues, get lunch, get coffee with your colleagues. When you're working from home, you can expand upon that. Go get coffee with people who are not in your office. Go get lunch with people who are not in your office. Have a virtual chat with somebody just because. And if you do that, you will build a broader and more robust network. And that can definitely help you in the long term.
Excellent. The New Corner Office is the book. Now, it is, Laura, it's an audiobook at this point. Is that right?
It's an audiobook and an ebook because we needed to turn it around quickly. Mm-hmm. So those are both immediate mechanisms for publishing. And there's also, you know, difficulties with bookstores being closed right now or less traffic at airport bookstores and the like. So right now it's an ebook and audiobook, but we may come out with a paperback later.
Laura, people can find you at lauravanderkam.com. It's Laura, VanderKam.com, and at L Vanderkam. Thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life. It's a great conversation to have. We've all been having it a lot, and it's nice to know that you are someone who's actually proven that it works well. So I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.